Hello, and welcome to EG's October monthly market update. I'm Nadia Olgamri, EG's data editor. In this edition, we'll look at how the recovery is taking hold in both the retail and the London offices market. We speak with LDC's Matthew Hopkinson about how budget supermarkets are winning and why Christmas trading has lost its importance. But first, our city editor, Jack Sidders, talks to EG's head of office research, Tom Pilkington, to find out what's behind the capital's bumper quarter three.
This is Jack Sidders reporting for Estates Gazette. I'm joined by Tom Pilkington, EGI head of London offices research, who's just put together the Q3 data for the Loma analysis. Tom, the headline here seems to be that take up across the first three quarters of the year has already exceeded the entire 2012, but where in particular are we seeing a strong performance?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. The figure for the year to date is 9.2 million square feet, exceeding the 8.32 million that we saw last year. If we break it down on a market by market basis, then I think that the place to start is the Southern Fringe, where for the quarter there's a take up figure of 833,000 square feet, which somewhat surpasses the 171,000 square feet that we recorded last quarter. If we look closely at that, then we can see that there's two main components to it. The first is the new UK letting at The Place, which is 430,000 square feet. The second component is the Ogilvy and Mather deal at Sea Containers House. Take those out, and the figure's more in line with what we were seeing last quarter. Nonetheless, it's impressive. And there are also other significant lettings on the Southern Fringe, such as another letting at the Shard. Away from the Southern Fringe, then, again, the city core continues to do well. We recorded 992,000, so just shy of a million there. Not quite the highs of the 1.4 million that we recorded last quarter, but impressive nonetheless. On a quarter-by-quarter basis, we can see that the West End is up by 51% on last quarter, at 794,000 square feet, so a much-needed fill-up there. It received a late boost in the quarter when Facebook agreed to take just shy of 90,000 square feet at 10 Brock Street. The Docklands also had a good quarter. It's a market that's typically fueled by pre-lets. This quarter it was second-hand space, and it was KPMG taking 205,000 square feet at 30 North Colonnade, and there was also a significant letting there to Shell. The City Fringe and Midtown were a little quieter, but decent quarters for them as well.
Okay, and obviously not all submarkets have the same sort of availability, but it seems like the City particularly has had a couple of healthy quarters, particularly in the context of the last few years. Where are vacancy rates now, and where can we expect to see development starting to be brought forward?
Well, I think if we look at the City core, then the availability rate has dropped to 8.5% this quarter. It's the first time it's dropped below 10% since Q3 2008. So I think that's very significant in itself, and you'd expect us to see further rental growth in the city now. With respect to developments, I think it's important that we've seen the new Ludgate development, which is 479,000 square feet, go under construction this quarter. And it's also great to see that those Leadenhall Triangle plans for at least part of the site were submitted. So undoubtedly that's a great thing to see. Elsewhere in the market, the West End, we've talked about it for a couple of quarters now. The availability rate there is low. It's dropped to 5.28% this quarter. And also the City Fringe, that sits at 5.55%. Midtown has actually moved out slightly, sitting at 6.94, but I think that's far from ideal in itself.
Going on to those all-important agents league tables, now at the start of the year we had the guys involved with the Google deal doing well, so Savills and DTZ posting big numbers. Seen a couple of changes since then. Who's come out of Q3 looking healthy?
Well, there's those usual faces at the top of the table. This quarter for the overall table, it's CBRE topping it, and they've topped it by some way. They've got about 500,000 square foot on their old rival Jones Lang LaSalle. So CBRE finished top with 1.3 million square feet, or we're looking at it in a different way, 32% of market share, and that sits ahead of Jones Lang at 774,000 square feet. I think other things of note in that top 10 would be the entrance of Blue Book. They started out around April of this year, I believe, but already gaining some serious traction in the market. and the boys there previously worked for Jones Lang LaSalle, and they've obviously taken some useful contacts with them, and they're sitting on 306,000 square feet down in 8th place. They acted on the deal at Sea Containers House.
And so are they particularly Southern Fringe focused, or have they got instructions across the market?
They've got instructions elsewhere as well, and I think they've also been acting on 100 New Oxford Street. Elsewhere in the submarkets, Hatton Real Estate continue their good run. It's the third quarter in a row that they've sat on top of the City Fringe market, so I'm sure they'll be impressed and happy with what's going on there. In the West End, that's a market where there seems to be more change going on a quarter-by-quarter basis. But this time round, no Frank Topic with the 33% market share. In terms of investment, CBRE continue their dominance at that table. They sit on top of the market with 24% market share, having transacted 1.4 million, billion even, of property. And that's some way clear of Savills in second place with 12%.
Brilliant. Tom, thanks very much.
Cheers, Joe.
It's not just London office tenants that are expanding. EG Markets editor Noella Peer-Kivlahan talks to LDC's Matthew Hopkinson about budget supermarkets and why the top four supermarkets should be concerned about their current expansion plans.
Matthew, in the last few weeks we've had the spate of results from the supermarket companies. And once again, well, Aldi is really shining bright. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think they've had a very successful model in terms of the store format and the locations. And we've seen that consumers are very much still value conscious. And I think that Aldi have managed to, in partnership also, I suppose, in along lines with Lidl, to provide, you know, a slightly different offer from the big four who very much compete. So they're very much on the fringe and attracting more and more consumers by the numbers they've shown.
So you think, is it more than just being perceived as being cheaper?
I think it is, because I think it's more of this sort of European offer. They do have different product ranges and lines. And there are certain, you know, towns now where we've had such an expansion of food retailers that consumers can obviously park in one place and go into four of them almost within half an hour. So I think that their growth demonstrates this alternative offer and the fact that the consumer is very savvy and that Aldi's now sort of built up a brand reputation within the UK. It's obviously got some significantly fewer numbers, but it's growing at the fastest rate. So I think it's probably about volume in terms of that. But in terms of a sort of like-for-like basis, then I think we're going to continue to see the growth. And as long as they can obviously retain those consumers, because I think with all of this, one has to realise that consumers are very wary. They're very disloyal from the past days of Tesco Club Card and everything. And I think that Tesco are obviously investing a lot of money to try and pull customers back. And therefore, it's all a case of the seesaw. And at the moment, the seesaw's in favour of Aldi and the discounters.
So at the end of the day, I mean, the winners can only be the consumers.
Absolutely. It's definitely the consumers. And I think that the retailers have to think sharp and continue to evolve their products in order to maintain those relationships.
From a market point of view, Matthew, do you think, is there space for Aldi to open more stores in the UK?
I think there is. We've got, they're just under 500 at the moment, which is sort of fairly low for most of the supermarket chains, particularly when you take into account the sort of fast growth of Morrison's into the convenience market, the growth of Waitrose and Little Waitrose. So absolutely there is an opportunity because they're not all over the country. And if they want to go head-to-head with the Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Asda, then they need to actually have that expansion to provide the opportunity for the consumer to walk in their door.
And should the big names, should they be worried?
I think they should, because I think it's all a case of this market share. And you know, you can always see in the numbers the sensitivity towards that. And the question is, you know, you lose market share, you lose profitability, which we've seen with Tesco, and they're having to invest more and more money to turn that around. And it's a question about changing the consumer. It's not just about the store, but changing your offer and the consumer to get them back onto being loyal. So I think it's a very challenging task which needs to be addressed every single day to maintain that profit share.
So as a whole, with the retail market, we have seen good news coming through, but are you hopeful that we're through the worst?
I think that we're in a slightly sort of false dawn perhaps at the moment in terms of the talk around the house prices, and I also think we're obviously into the run-up to Christmas, which is the bumper time for most of the retailers. I think, as we've seen from the supermarket numbers, many of them face increasing number of challenges, and it comes down to volumes and this profitability. So I still think that a number of them are at risk, and I think that was shown through the Grimsey review data that Company Watch showed. But I think there is potential, there is light at the end of the tunnel. But as Philip Clark himself said, you know, people are still very savvy, they're still very cautious. And if the public sector is getting a 1% pay rise and inflation's running over 3%, we've all got a lot less money in our pockets.
So does that mean will we be keeping an even closer eye on Christmas sales this year as the real barometer as to how the market is doing?
I think we will do. But I also think the interesting thing that the sort of last 3 or 4 years have shown us is that people are very savvy, and it's not about necessarily a build-up to Christmas and sales, because we're being constantly bombarded. So I think people are much cleverer, a bit like the Christmas club of the old days, to stock up and take advantage of offers at the right time. But what we've also seen is that the retailers have gone into discounting, you know, very early in most cases. And once one or two of them go, the floodgates open. So whilst it is important, I don't think it's as important as it used to be in the old days, because it's a fight for survival 12 months of the year.
And Matthew, well, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.